This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. 5 years ago, journalist Steve Fishman was traveling through Nicaragua on a grant when a blood vessel popped in his brain. His vision swirled, and he had the worst headache of his life. But it wasn't until 2 weeks later, when he flew home to New York, that his brain hemorrhage was diagnosed. He underwent brain surgery. 1 year later, just as he thought he'd recovered, he had a seizure and was diagnosed with epilepsy. Throughout his ordeal, Fishman took notes on his own experiences. He interviewed his doctors and other neurosurgeons at the hospital. He sat in on other patients' brain operations and was even given a videotape of his own surgery. His book, A Bomb in the Brain, has just come out in paperback. Fishman writes that when he first went into surgery, his editor at Science Digest suggested it was a great opportunity for a story. The editor offered to send a photographer to take pictures of Fishman being wheeled into the operating room. At the time, Fishman thought this sounded exploitative, but he ended up becoming obsessed with investigating and writing about his condition. I asked him why he changed his mind.
I think that I did it out of habit first. I found myself taking notes during the operation, during the hospitalization. I found that I was talking to people and wanting to find out things about what was going on. And then it was later that I decided, well, since I've done the bulk of the research, I might as well go ahead and write this article. It was as I wrote the article that this thing became, and it's only looking back that I kind of realized this, it really did become this obsession. I just always wanted to know more about it. I wanted to hang out with these people. I wanted to, you know, not only meet my doctors, but go to dinner at their houses. I think that in some ways it probably became a little out of control. Looking back, I'm not sure it was probably the healthiest thing to do.
Why not?
It wasn't the healthiest thing to do because it would have been great to put it behind me. I think that in the long term, maybe the way to put it behind me for me was to exhaustively research the topic. If there had been another way to do it, I would have been very happy to take that way. If I could have been the type of person who could have said, well, 2 weeks in the hospital, I've had brain surgery, hey, it's a bad haircut, nothing more, you know, let's move on, that would have been fine. I found out that I wasn't that type of person, and it really did take up a couple years of my life.
You know, I was wondering if being able to interview your doctors and to be the journalist and not just the patient gave you more equality in the relationship. Because I know so often when you're sick, or especially if it's a life-threatening problem, the doctor seems to have so much power and you feel so weak and sometimes kind of inconsequential as well.
Yeah, that is true. When you're in the hospital, you feel a little bit like you're being ministered by a bureaucrat. He's got a certain amount of time for you, and he is busy. But you really do feel like you're this person in kind of one moment to the next, you might be in urgent need, and you're not sure that the person that you need to call on is going to be busy or not. Interviewing my doctors really did put me on a different level between me and them. What happened, though, wasn't exactly equality. It was as if I was being a spy, because I never really left behind this status of being a patient. I was always someone who was being treated, someone who had been ill. And even when I was given this permission to kind of sneak behind the lines, in fact, be escorted behind the lines of this really high-powered medicine and into the operating room and with the residents, I always felt like I had the status of someone who had been a patient. And so while I had this increased knowledge, it wasn't exactly equality. It was some kind of, I don't know exactly how to describe it. It almost felt a little bit like I shouldn't be doing it, like I was doing something under false pretenses.
Well, you said you felt like a spy, and I'm wondering if you learned things about brain surgeons that you feel that brain surgeons would prefer to keep from patients and lay people.
The short answer, I think, is yes. The long answer is that brain surgeons are actually, I found, incredibly open people. And once you make that crossover from being a patient, who is someone who really doesn't get any information, to being a colleague or some kind of peer, you're let in on almost everything. And there I was in the operating room as equipment broke and tempers raged, and I was sure that the person on the asleep on the table was going to do nothing but die. And that's for a patient, and maybe for anyone who doesn't have that kind of experience, nothing short of a horrifying experience. Being in an operating room with the surgeon who was my surgeon, it was the first time that I'd attended a brain surgery when I was awake for it. And suddenly, the aneurysm, which is this pressurized bubble that comes off of an artery, bursts. There's blood filling the small portion of the head that they're working on. And suddenly, the equipment breaks. They couldn't proceed to work on it. And this is the time in an operation when it's absolutely critical to get to work. That much I knew. There was a combination of hysteria and silence in the operating room. And I reacted to this like a tourist, like someone going to a play, like someone moseying around the scene of an accident. All I really had for cues were the dramatic ones. You know, people shouting, people saying unfriendly things to people with whom they were friends. I had, you know, nothing short of the experience of a catastrophe. Now, whether that experience is good for every patient who's going to undergo a brain surgery, I think it probably isn't.
I would doubt it, actually. Let's talk a little bit about your story, about what happened to you. You were in Nicaragua on a grant. Mm-hmm. And it was a really worst-case scenario. Here you are in a third-world country with a life-threatening illness, a blood vessel burst in your brain. It's not only a third-world country, it's a revolutionary country which your government is trying to overthrow. Plus, you're broke. So that's the scenario. What were your first symptoms?
I was standing in a hotel lobby, actually trying to get a room, which they told me wasn't available, when suddenly, and I mean that in the most literal sense, like a thunderbolt, I got this unbelievable pain in the back of my head, which was accompanied by a total blurring of my vision from 1 second to the next.
You went to a hospital, you saw several doctors, and they all misdiagnosed you. What were some of the things you were told by the doctors you saw?
Well, what happened was I began this, what I was an adventure, a medical adventure. I actually had always wanted to learn more about the Sandinista healthcare system, which is very good for certain kinds of illnesses. And here I had, I was telling myself at one point, a chance to take a kind of an introductory course. What I did was I went to the hospital, and I was in this waiting room with women with their babies who were screaming. Sitting on this hard bench, staring at my hands, which were kind of shimmering, hoping that some doctor who I'd never met, who my country was funding a war against, would take me by the shoulders and say something like, "Son, it's going to be all right." The doctor, in fact, looked at me and said, "I can't find anything wrong," which was about the most benign diagnosis I got. I continued to go to doctors, some of them in the public sector, some of them in the private sector. One doctor in the private sector looked down my throat and said, "Well, why didn't you tell me this? Your throat is red. All you've got is a virus." Now, that sounds ridiculous now, knowing that I had a brain hemorrhage, but at the moment, it was great news. I thought, "This man is wonderful. Why didn't anyone else tell me this? I'm just going to go home and lie down for a while." The problem, of course, was that lying down didn't do anything for my headache, which continued to beat like some kind of hammer on my head, and my vision, which was kind of getting a little bit better at the sides, but which still left me feeling like a blind person crossing the street by listening to cars. It took me about 2 weeks, really, 7 doctors. About the only good part of it was that my total cost of medical care was $95. It took me those 2 weeks to figure out that it was time to return to the United States, get another medical opinion.
Which is what you did. Let me reintroduce you. My guest is Steve Fishman. And he's written a book called A Bomb in the Brain, which tells his own story of having brain surgery for a cerebral hemorrhage. And he also interviewed his doctors and other doctors in the hospital where he stayed. After your surgery, you sat in on other surgery and watched it standing right next to the surgeons. Is there an image that stays with you most from the surgery that you saw?
I don't think I'll forget the image of the first operation that I attended. I've mentioned that before, but the image that comes on my mind, what you should understand is that you actually do, as an observer, stand in an operating room. You can actually lean over the shoulder of a surgeon and peer into this 2-inch square that's been carved out of a person's skull. Look at the curves of his brain. The better view, however, is on the video screen, which in the case of the operating room I was in was maybe 4 or 5 feet from where the surgeon was working. And he works through a microscope. That microscope projects onto this video screen what is being seen. And there was a moment during that operation when the bloody malformation, much like the one that I had in my head, ruptured. And what I saw was this 19-inch diameter screen suddenly fill with red. It's an image that actually still kind of makes me stop and want to do some deep breathing exercises. The operating room is an incredibly dramatic situation. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. I mean, oftentimes it is routine, but there are some times when things go wrong, when tempers flare, when equipment breaks down. There was one time in an operating room when a laser that's used to cut out certain kinds of tumor actually ignited the sheets that covered the body of the sleeping patient, and there was a fire in an operating room. I mean, things happen. There's just too many human factors and too many machine factors for things not to happen in an operating room. So it is this, it's a real drama, and I think every time I went in there, I had a little bit the feeling that I had when I start a roller coaster ride.
I want to talk with you more about what you experienced and what you learned both about your own brain hemorrhage and about neurosurgery in general, but first we're going to take a short break. My guest, Steve Fishman, has written a memoir called A Bomb in the Brain. We'll be back after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Steve Fishman was on a reporter's grant in Nicaragua when he had a cerebral hemorrhage. He made it back to the United States, and while he was in the hospital as a brain surgery patient, Fishman was also standing back observing the experience. He returned to the hospital after his recovery to see what had gone on behind the scenes. His new book, A Bomb in the Brain, is the result of his attempt to understand his illness and its treatment. You were able to actually experience what might be like the ultimate in metaphysics or something, which is like the brain watching itself. You actually watched a videotape of your own brain surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you saw in watching the videotape was the little hole in your brain where the little piece of tissue had to be cut out.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good to have that kind of visual representation of something that you would otherwise never see because one doesn't see their brain?
I don't know if it's good. I really don't. If I had it to do over again, maybe I wouldn't do it. I really did get on this line of research that I couldn't stop. And and for me, what happened was that in the end, it gave me an appreciation of brain surgery, an appreciation of medicine that I don't think a lot of people have. For one thing, I did get to see the videotape of my operation. All major teaching hospitals videotape operations. I don't think any of them show them to the patients. Because of the relationship that I had with my brain surgeon, he said, sure, I'll show it to you. I think it also had to do with the fact that I was a reporter who seemingly didn't have any ill effects, any side effects from my surgery. So he said, let's sit down, I'll show it to you. I thought that when I saw that videotape, I was going to be smart and reasoned. I was going to ask kind of bright questions. I was going to say, well, doctor, what's the name of this blood vessel? And you know, that's a little bit larger than I thought. my brain came onto the screen. It looked to me like cottage cheese. I just had this image of cottage cheese. I think my jaw hit the table, and I said, in my smart, reasoned way, I said, "Oh boy!" And that was about all I could muster for minutes. The thing looked to me like some scene of a natural disaster. I thought that, you know, and I'd seen brain surgery, so I don't know what I was really expecting. But here I was watching a horror film all of a sudden. I was not this kind of reportorial person with a list of questions and a microphone. I was somebody reacting to an event that had gone on and had really affected them in a very personal way. You know, there is something about this that I think that people who have any kind of surgery, any kind of illness, indulge themselves, and other people think they're complaining. But there is an aspect of kind of emotional reconditioning I'm really convinced of, and it's not just my own experience, it's talking to other people. After you get sick, getting better is a process of getting used to what happened to you. I think in my case, it took me too long. I'm not always sure that process is completed. But there is a very long and difficult process that you go through of readjusting to yourself as someone who's been medically fixed. And what complicates that process is that people don't believe you. They think that you're complaining or that you're making too much of it, that you're exaggerating, and so does the medical community. They tell you, take it easy. They tell you, you get better. My surgeon was very understanding. My neurologists were very understanding. But they're very separate from the experience that I had as a patient. And what I think worked for me in this book, and maybe in the experience as a whole, is that I got to live the experience from both sides. I got to be both a patient having this excruciating personal experience and then move to the doctor's side and watch what kind of finesse and care and real concern goes into it.
After you thought you were pretty well recovered from your brain surgery, you had a seizure, and you were diagnosed by your doctor as having epilepsy resulting from some scar tissue in the brain left from the operation. You were still in the process of interviewing your doctor, and the subject of the epilepsy that resulted from the operation came up. And I'm interested in hearing whether you wanted to know if he felt remorseful that you had this terrible lifelong after effect as a result of the operation, or if brain surgery is such a difficult and precise type of surgery that it's just kind of expected that this kind of thing might happen, if it goes with the territory. Did you talk about that with him?
I did talk about that with him. It was almost the last conversation we had. And I think it was something that I wanted to put off. I think that my emotions as a patient were very complicated. And I think that all patients must have complicated emotions, especially towards their doctors. You know, here's the guy who saves your life, does nothing short of that. Mm-hmm. And yet there's part of you that, and I don't think this is really too strong a word, that hates this guy. That experiences an emotion of anger. It's certainly nothing that I would express. My surgeon's an extremely scholarly, scientific, and able surgeon. And yet there's a part of me that knows that I'm the guy who was asleep on the table and woke up sometime later with epilepsy, and he walked away. And there's something in that inequality that bugged me. In looking back at this interview and in re-listening to it since it's on a tape recording that I made, what I find is that what I'm really angry about is, and what I really want to kind of bring up to the surgeon in a way is, I have seizures and you don't. You know, medicine was the miracle that was supposed to deliver me. Surgery in particular was the technique that was supposed to kind of was supposed to usher me into and out of the hospital and then let me go back to my normal life. And here I am spending all my waking hours wondering about whether I'm going to have a seizure. So the answer is yes, I really was angry at him, and I think I really did want him to feel a kind of remorse. I guess I have to add that I know that the guy is a very human individual who feels very much about what he does, and who probably, you know, surgeons can't cross that line. They can't start feeling remorse for every patient that they have. They'd never be able to operate.
Well, let me just ask you briefly, was this something terrible that went wrong in the surgery? Was this a terrible error on the surgeon's part, or is this a fairly typical side effect of an operation that otherwise saved your life?
Yeah, I don't want to leave that impression at all. No, the surgery was a success. I had another surgeon look at the videotape of my operation. I kind of showed it around rather than get out a tape from the video store. I showed the video of my operation around, and another surgeon said it was an absolute tour de force. So the technique was flawless. The epilepsy could be a result of the initial brain hemorrhage that I experienced in Nicaragua, which did a considerable amount of violence to the cerebral terrain. I mean, you can see it. It looks like the fist of some newborn was punched a hole in the back of my brain. Or it can be, in a certain number of cases, a side effect of brain surgery that's unavoidable. You know, the statistics vary depending on the site and on the type of operation.
I thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, thank you, Terry.
Steve Fishman's book, A Bomb in the Brain, has just been published in paperback by Avon. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.